Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian, Insight Podcast number 195. And we're recording this a day early on Thursday, the 8th of December. You'll probably hear it a few days later. I'm Steve Litchfield for All About Symbian. And with me, I have up in Edinburgh.
Yeah, a very, very windswept Ewan Spence. I feel like Kate Bush and Wuthering Heights here, to be honest.
Yes, if you hear Ewan go, oh, halfway through, that's because he's been blown off his perch. So.
Either that or I've had to listen to the new Ollie Muirs album.
probably blown away already is David Gilson up in hell, but he can't make it, so he probably, yes, has been thoroughly windswept away into his garden. We do have with us, down in Sussex, Mr. Rafe Blandford.
Hello, everybody. It's windy here, and I've sort of frozen to the gatepost, it feels like, but winter's well and truly arrived.
Absolutely. And we get stuck into some news and analysis. We have had official confirmation. There's been various rumours about Symbian Belle updates for existing Symbian 3 and Anna devices for a few weeks now. We've had various symptoms, Rafe. We've had the Navi firm, which is kind of a firmware flashing system online that some people access, especially geeks. They've noted that the Symbian Belle has been updated there and has been online for a few days now. So that lent us to believe that maybe it was just round the corner in terms of an over-the-air update, or certainly a Nokia Suite update for existing devices. We had all the existing Symbian 3 phones actually running Belle at Nokia World, and that was five weeks ago now. So everything we've been saying in the podcast is it's just around the corner. You were guessing it mid-December. We've now had an official statement, which is not long, so I'll just read it out here. This is officially from Nokia. We will make Nokia Belle available to consumers globally by rolling out the Belle software update for the existing Nokia range of smartphones, and they list them all, in early 2012. And we have had the Nokia Malaysia and Nokia Thailand Facebook sites both quoting things like February 2012, which is a tiny bit disappointing. But I have to say, Rafe, first of all, I cannot find a single official statement by Nokia ever promising that they would definitely get Belle out as an update for existing phones in 2011. I know we were all kind of assuming it, but they never actually said it. So it's incredibly frustrating. I'm champing at the bit here, as I'm sure most of our listeners are, to get Belle on their N8s and E7s. But you can't actually call it a delay, can you?
Technically, I suppose you're right, Steve. Although I think it's probably worth saying that when it was announced and afterwards as well, the inference speaking to Nokia spokespeople was always that it would arrive in 2011. There may not have been a sort of official statement about that, but I think that was the broad expectation, and kind of reinforcing that, if you will, is if you recall the Office Suite announcement that there was an update to that coming, and that was dependent obviously on Symbian Belle, and it would arrive, and that was said to be officially by the end of the year. So I suspect the intention always was to release Belle by the end of the year. And, you know, if you go back earlier, you know, look at the timelines, I think it was probably scheduled for sort of November, December sometime, which is where my guess kind of came from. But at the same time, you know, it arrives when it arrives, and it's no point getting too wound up about it. And I, for one, would far rather see it running stably on the devices and not to have any problems with the update process, because it's not a straightforward process to do a completely new version while making sure you're not running out of memory and while making sure you retain all the data.
Yeah.
I think it's also fair to point out that people should be thinking, what do they want? Do they want something fast and quick and in their hands now that will be a little bit buggy, or do you wait until it's right? Now, I know that a lot of the techies and the geeks out there will go, oh, it's okay, we can put up with one or two flaws and everything, but Symbian can't. Symbian is in the twilight of its life, and this is an update that needs to go right. A lot of people have been praising the UI. This is the one that's essentially going to keep Nokia's numbers nice and high, or at least high enough, until Windows Phone comes in with a low-cost unit and starts sweeping in. This is essentially the hold the line. This is their Zulu, for want of a better word. You wait until you see the whites of their eyes. You don't go off early. You don't fire early. You wait, wait. These are my smartphones. Wait, wait, wait. Zulus, thousands of them. And there's not thousands of them. There's millions of Symbian units that are going out there. Get it right first time. Make sure it doesn't destroy any user's data, which is a non-trivial task in itself. And at the same time, you know, Nokia only have a certain amount of man hours available every day. They're running, well, what have we got? They've got to get this right now, Rafe, with the names and everything. They've got S40 and all the new stuff that's being thrown into that. They've got
Series 40.
the Bell update on
Symbian.
Thank you. They've got the 7.7.4.0 patch and the on top of 7.7.4.0 patch in the next patch that's coming out on Windows Phone.
We should probably point out that it's actually Accenture now doing most of the work on Symbian, although I suspect in this crossover period there is a bit of both going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and I think, you know, just pausing and taking breath, it's not going to kill anybody if it's a week or two into 2012. You know, people who are making Christmas buying decisions will get Bell in new handsets. You know, they're just not going to get them in the updated old units. And I think that's, given the situation Nokia's in at the moment, in the markets, it's on a finely balanced edge, trying to reinvent itself. I think this is a very pragmatic and sensible decision that they're making.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubting that this is disappointing, particularly for power users, but I think we should probably be realistic and say, you know, with the mid-tier devices, you can get Bell right now if you want it. On the older devices, it's probably less of an issue. And as I say, I think it's important about the stability. I mean, if you look at it from a technical point of view, it's also worth remembering these older devices have less RAM than the newer Bell devices. That's important because Bell is obviously based on Qt and Qt Quick and QML and all that technology. And it's actually only recently that we've had the next update to Qt 4.7.4, which actually reduces the memory requirements. And I suspect a lot of that was actually about making sure Bell would run in a stable way on these handsets. I mean, as Steve rightly said, we did see them all running on it at Nokia World, but bear in mind that that was a fresh install and it wasn't necessarily an active handset. Absolutely. And one of the things that Nokia does when they're testing is to really load up the device and use them as a typical user would. And so that kind of testing takes a while. On top of that, you then need to go through operator certification. So although I suspect Bell is ready right now, and it could be rolled out if Nokia wished to, it isn't ready with all the operator certification. I suspect they've now run out of time to do that before the Christmas break, particularly in Europe and all of that, where most of the development is taking place for this, although there is some out in India as well. And so I suspect the decision got made, can we do it reliably before Christmas? No, let's push it into the new year. And we'll see probably a similar timeline for the rollout of Anna. It will take a couple of months at least for it to get onto all the handsets. But it's worth reminding people that there are other updates on the way. There's at least two more updates scheduled for Symbian that will happen properly. I think, you know, similar timing, 6 months after they did for Anna and Bell. So probably one in 2012 later on and maybe one in 2013. Just one thing I will pick out from the statement, the Nokia 500 was explicitly mentioned because there was some doubt whether that would get Symbian Bell because it's slightly different hardware configuration. But actually that makes for a really fantastic value Bell handset because you can pick that up now for £100 on pay-as-you-go in the UK. So you'll certainly be able to find it cheaper if you shop around a bit or look at second-hand options. And Bell running on a £100 handset, that's a pretty amazing deal, if you ask me. So
it's also not just the Bell as the operating system, it's all the applications around it as well. There's the web browser, there's the mail, there's the messaging, there's the calendar, there's the contacts, there's all of that stuff. You know, you're writing not just one application, you're writing the base operating system, and maybe about another 30 or 40 utility applications as well. And they all have to play nice with each other.
That's right. And Bell, I mean, we've described it as probably the biggest update that Symbian has had, I would say, almost ever. I mean, it's in line with the kind of going from non-touch to touch, but actually there was very little change in UI. Here there's a big change in UI. And as you were saying, it will make the difference for the shipment of the last 100 million Symbian devices, how well they do. And I actually think Bell in the market makes Symbian very competitive in the mid-tier. And the only problem that they're then facing really is one of perception. And in the mid-tier, that maybe matters less because people are buying the reliability of the Nokia brand. And we've all tried Bell now, and we all like it a lot. And so there's a disappointment that it's not available for the old handsets. I really want to get Bell on things like the N8 and the E7, because I suspect that will make me go back to using them a lot more than I do at the moment. I've kind of got two devices, one in each pocket, Windows Phone and Symbian. And the Symbian ones have better battery life. But for some things, the Windows Phone devices do better. But yes, so early 2012, and we'll keep you updated as to the exact timing. But if I had to guess, I would say we can probably expect to see this starting to roll out probably the beginning of February. I would anticipate that Nokia would be very keen to get this well underway before MWC, when they'll be making a new series of announcements.
Yeah, and just to reiterate one thing, if this was a clean install, if Nokia were to say, okay, you can all have Bell now, but you're all going to have to hard reset your phones. It'll wipe the phone, and you'll have to resync your data and reinstall your applications. The geeks would say, no problem, I'm on it. And 98% of other users would say, what? You just lost all my data, because they wouldn't have done their backups. They wouldn't know how to sync, and there will be a complete outcry. So the reason for this delay, as you say, is the sheer complexity of an in-place install that doesn't lose anything. If you think back to 2004, 2005, we were all used, every time you had a firmware update, you lost everything. You had to set everything up from scratch. We then moved on, I think the N82 was, I think, the first device, Rafe, that had the in-place updates and without losing anything. And ever since then, we've been used, you don't even need to back up. You just update the firmware, everything carries on, life carries on. And there will be a complete outcry if Nokia were to do that this time. So they have to get it right, and they have to do it so that the firmware installs over the top reliably in 99.999% of cases on their test phones. And that's quite a hard figure to get to.
But that's right. And here's an interesting question. For something like the Bell update, how much are you going to have to tell users that it's going to happen? Because actually, as we've said, there's a very substantial visual change, and not everyone will be necessarily keen on that. Bear in mind that not all the people who have this update appear. And as you say, the expectations of how an update should behave have changed enormously. And that in itself is a real eye-opener if you look back a few years. But, you know, your average user, and you say there's an update available for your phone, you update and it's completely changed. I wonder if there's any provision for sort of people being a bit shocked that their phone suddenly looks very different. I mean, we said we prefer using it that way, but I wonder if Nokia's thought about that at all. Because I suspect there may be some people out there said, you know, it's not broken, don't change it. I want it as it is.
I bet there'll be no way to downgrade firmware, so they will have to actually accept as part of the introductory there is an update. It'll have to say, warning, this does involve some user interface changes. Do not install this if you don't want to proceed, if you're happy with the current way the phone works. And that will be a first. I've never seen that before in a Nokia firmware update notice, but I think they'll have to do it this time.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be interesting to see just how they handle that.
Yeah, personally, I actually prefer Elements of Anna rather than Elements of Bell. I found Bell very fiddly in terms of the fonts, but I'm assuming they are twiddling the fonts as part of the last few weeks of development and twiddling and getting it all optimized for the current devices. So maybe some of our minor cosmetic complaints will have been addressed by the time these updates come out.
If they're doing minor cosmetic changes at this point, Steve, it's going to be a long time. I personally think that the issues that are holding this up, personal opinion here, are deployment issues and testing issues. I think that the line will have been decided, that they will have locked down the feature set, the fonts and everything, a good 3 or 4 months ago. I mean, I'll go back to Windows Phone here for a second. Their Mango update went spectacularly well, but they locked down the feature set in January and then spent the next 9 months bug hunting and testing. If Nokia Labs are deciding what font to use just now for a rollout in 3 weeks' time, possibly, Accenture will not run like that. I don't think DW will let them be like that. We have a lockdown feature set. We're now in the nitty-gritty of making sure the deployment works, in my opinion.
It's not so much, I think, about the actual font, as I think Steve's probably referring to font sizes here, and that is something that's customized for every device. So obviously it'll be different on something like the E6 and also on the E7 with the bigger screen. They'll actually scale it as appropriate to the screen size. And like Steve, I hope they actually work on that for each of the respective devices, because it does make a substantial difference. But yes, you're right, you know, the feature set and all of that has been locked down a long time ago, and I suspect actually most of the programmers are now hard at work on the next version. And as you say, it's really about the deployment, which is far less about the coding and far more about the intricacies of certification and deployment.
Yeah, and we should just remind people, as we said in the last podcast, that some regions, some variants of SIM-in 3 handsets in some parts of the world only just receiving Anna. So these rollouts do take more months than you can possibly imagine. Let's move on now. Google has finally pulled its venerable, I think if I can use that word, Ewan, its Java Gmail client, which I've relied on device after device the last 3 or 4 years. I suspect you've been a bit of a fan as well. Are you sad to see it go?
No.
Sure.
Ewan doesn't care about legacy users.
No, that's it. You're all good. Look, this was that Google's entire purpose is to get people looking at adverts that they supply. What's the one thing that wasn't in this application? Little bar that showed you adverts. This was a loss leader for Google. When it came out at the time, you know, Google was the sort of search box on the Symbian devices. There was a kickback going to the developers in terms of 0.0001 cent every time somebody does a search through that. Gmail was as a way of getting people to use the Google services and see the adverts at the site. They didn't want that. They wanted to shunt people off to the mobile site, to the HTML5 site, and eventually off, obviously, to their own operating system as well, and actually earn something from the user. The Gmail Java application earns nothing for Google. Okay, there's a tiny, tiny bit of, oh, I can still use it on my handset, but that's it. In the same way, I mean, as you wrote in the article, Steve, the chances are the servers are going to be going off in the near future. I don't think that's going to be strictly the case, because my understanding is that the Java client used a version of IMAP, and IMAP is going to be there for third-party clients and applications on other handsets. But yes, I do see that, and Google can't roll back Gmail out of IMAP and out of devices using a different way of access. But things that are under their control, no, they'll pull that back. I'm sure if we look carefully, they'll go, we've a lovely HTML5 website. It runs nicely in the Symbian web browser. Could you please go ahead and use that? And they'll be able to show you an advert. If their heart's not in it, just leave.
And of course, we do actually in the news post entitled Gmail application finally pulled by Google, which you can find on the site, we do actually link through to the JAR file, which if you're really desperate to reinstall this off, perhaps after wiping an older Symbian phone, you can actually reinstall that and it will actually work. Who knows how long it will carry on working for. If Ewan's right, it may carry on working quite happily for you.
It's worth noting that actually Google have done exactly the same thing to their BlackBerry client, which was also, I think, if anything, more popular given some of the difficulties with Gmail and BlackBerry in terms of the connectivity and Bez and all of that, and people were using it in particular for search. And I have to say, this is what I had used it for on Symbian devices as well. I'd load up that Java email client and do a search to get an email that might have been months old rather than stuff that was sitting on my device, because that was often faster than using Nokia messaging to do the same thing. And Nokia messaging sometimes didn't work at all for that particular function, depending on what version, what device you were on. I mean, I do see it as a little bit on the short-sighted side, but I suspect they've looked at the numbers and said there aren't so many people using this. And as outlined in your news post, and particularly some of the comments, thanks to everyone who submitted those, there are some alternatives out there. But I suspect there will be some people, particularly with the older generation of devices. So I'm thinking back to a 63rd edition feature pack 2. And yes, there are still people using devices out there, despite our focus on the more modern devices, who will be using this and will be a bit surprised when it stops working. And the exact whether it will stop working and when is probably open to debate. But it's effectively, Google is saying we're not guaranteeing it anymore. And it does seem a shame to me, but I suppose it's something that inevitably happens to all services. You know, time moves on.
Well, their version of Maps as well, it's very old now, sort of 2 or 3 years out of date. I think the moment when Android really started to take off, which I guess was about mid-2009, early 2010 at the latest, at that point they thought, right, Android really is a go now. We're going to put all our mobile resources behind this. Support for other rival competing mobile operating systems will have to be pulled back and perhaps withdrawn altogether. That's the point at which the Google software for Symbian started to stagnate, and this is perhaps the first of the main Google apps for Symbian which has been withdrawn. I suspect maybe Maps will stop being offered as well soon.
Yeah, and it's a perfectly understandable viewpoint, and what Google is saying, the alternative we're offering is accessible via HTML5 and the web. I would say on the modern devices that works fine. If you've got the modern browser, it's workable. But of course, that is something that requires an online data connection. It's not as easy to use as a client application. I think that's particularly true for Maps, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But also for Gmail, you know, one of the good things about the Gmail Java client was it was extremely parsimonious in its use of data, especially compared to using the web version.
Yeah.
So I don't really buy Google's reasoning that, you know, the web experience is better now, so you should all use that. I think that's just sort of a little bit of PR wash to try and keep people happy.
It's also interesting to look at Eric Schmidt's comments back at the web at the start of this week, talking about Androids. I have to say, he was very much the We're the biggest guys in the room. You'll all cow down to us. Direct quotation from his speech from the platform. Whether you like Android or not, you will support that platform, and maybe you'll even deliver it first. I suspect Google have now decided that we are the biggest guys in the room, and we're going to start throwing our weight around. And if you're not supporting Android as a handset manufacturer, as a service provider, as an end user, then we're not going to be there for you.
Yeah.
And that's quite worrying, especially as you'd expect Apple to take that viewpoint. And what I'm finding interesting now is watching, you know, Apple work quite closely together with Nokia, with Microsoft, maybe not with Motorola, but it's almost like Google is now starting to pull up the drawbridges and becoming a big isolated, we've got more than 50% of the market share fortress, and probably a place they don't want to be. Certainly, short term, that might have some nice benefits, but we could be looking at the new Microsoft being Google and the new Google being Microsoft.
There's a scary thought. I think there is an interesting point in all this. I mean, no one should doubt that Android is incredibly powerful and has obviously taken a large market share. But when I read about those comments, I immediately sprung to mind, you know, Symbian, which at one point had 80% plus market share of the smartphone market. And even then,
100% at one point.
Well, quite. but, you know, in modern times, it's, you know, when the smartphone market was big, you know, we're talking tens of millions of devices a month, you know, certainly at the 60% level, so more than Google is now. And yet it still had problems, you know, attracting developers and services and things like that, because I think, you know, Android has the danger that the same thing happens to it that was the case with Symbian, that people aren't necessarily buying an Android handset as a smartphone. They're buying it because it's, you know, a phone. It's what they've been recommended in the shop. Where the tendency is, I think it's particularly true with iOS and Windows Phone. At the moment, it's the same way. It may change as Windows Phone goes down to the mid-tier. And the same thing happened with Symbian, is that when you get into those mid-tier devices, it becomes less of a smartphone and it's more just a smart device. And so I think Android will have to be very careful there. And certainly, you know, talking to other people in the industry, it's notable that there is quite a thing about, is Android, you know, fluffed up before the fall? Because there are certain questions around its future, its relationship with device manufacturers, you know, what happens with Samsung and Bada and that kind of thing. And so Google will need to be careful, and taking that kind of attitude probably won't make them very many friends. And they may not have to, of course, but it's why it's going to be interesting to watch what happens in the next few years. And it's, of course, a total contrast to what Nokia's has been saying for the last couple of years. You know, we want to be operator-friendly, and they've been doing that with Symbian, and they're going to do the same thing with Windows Phone. And, of course, also Apple doing its own thing, basically in complete isolation to the operators, but taking the kind of the stand that it stands for the consumer, and they want to create the best possible experience for the consumer, as long as it's you do things the Apple way. So there are three kind of competing, if you like, ways of doing things. I think perhaps everyone could probably look back at what happened to Symbian, how it sort of dominated the market, and since then has fallen back, and perhaps draw their lessons from it. So perhaps the winner will be one that's best able to look at the lessons of history.
Be nice to people on the way up, because you'll meet them on the way down. There's your lesson. Simple.
I love the way you, and in that quote from Eric Schmidt, you missed a bit out of the quote. You missed out the phrase, mwah.
Well, I didn't actually miss it out, but I have a small cat on my lap just now and a picture of Charles Gray that I'm looking at and going, Daddy.
I'm sure Rafe's got a cat on his lap as well. So let's move on. There's a new QML store beta out. This is Nokia's next generation version of their store client, written in QML rather than a mix of web runtime and Qt. We've now gone through about three or four different betas, Rafe. This has lasted now for about 2 or 3 months. Surely at some point they've got to actually release the thing. This latest update adds Arabic, Hebrew, and Kazakh languages, whatever the heck it, that is. That is support.
You just insulted all our listeners from mid-Asia. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Support for the VGA resolution in the Nokia E6. There's this rather interesting registration light. This is probably worthy of comment. Rather than forcing new users who've just picked up a Symbian 3 phone, presumably in the future when this is released and actually comes on devices, having to forcing them to register a Nokia account up front. New users are allowed to download up to 10 free applications without registering at all, just to give them a flavour. This is going to go live on December the 16th, which I guess will be in about a week's time. I guess by the, it won't actually matter because every single person who downloads this beta QML written store client over the next month or so will be a bona fide, a long-term Symbian geek and will have well and truly have a Symbian account, or a Nokia account. But certainly, Rafe, I think going sort of February, March time for this, quote, these franchise users, people buying Symbian smartphones in 2012 will come across the store, it will be baked into the firmware, this new QML version, and they'll be able to download some apps for free without registering, which I think is quite a nice idea.
Yes, it is. I mean, to answer your first point to begin with about the timing of these betas, I mean, to be fair to Nokia, the QML version of the App Store is kind of standard on Bell now, and indeed it's come onto some of the older devices as well. And as I understand it, actually some of the beta functionality has been slowly kind of coming out in those updates as well. If you look at the exact build numbers, you can see what was once a beta is now kind of the release version. And it's also shipping on some of the more recent devices. So it's kind of been almost a continual beta process. There have been a couple of releases ahead on the beta program, and it then comes without much fanfare into the full release. I think it's an improvement in just doing point releases, actually doing a bit more testing. I've always been in favour of that sort of thing. And those power users who like to be on the cutting edge can get the latest release, and kind of everyone's happy. And when it gets to the full release, it's had a bit more testing, so hopefully it should be more stable. But yes, I think you're right to pick up on this registration light is really quite important, especially for driving extra downloads, which is always going to be good for developers. Much the same thing was done on Series 40. You know, it was taking away the need to register if you're doing a free download. And that resulted in something like a 50% bounce upwards in terms of download numbers. So whether it will be quite so big on the Symbian platform, I wouldn't like to say, but certainly I'd expect there to be a substantial increase, because you know it gets people into downloading applications. They don't have to go through a registration process, which, even if you simplify it down as has been done with the on-device sign up, it's still a 5 or 6 stage process. You have to type in names rather than just hitting the download button and getting instant satisfaction. Of course, once you've done 10 downloads, you might be a bit more willing to go through that registration process. So I think it's a really interesting feature to see come in, and I'd actually expect it to have a notable impact on download numbers. So I think we'll have to probably watch the download numbers, as you say, maybe March, April time next year, because that's presumably when it will start being in the new devices where it will have the real impact, you know, new users. So yeah, I'm all in favour of that, and I suspect it will make some developers very happy as well, because anything that gives more downloads can only be a good thing, especially with the increasing number of ad-supported applications, where obviously these free downloads really begin to count.
Yeah, I love the way in the changelog they include improved search experience, include spelling correction, alternative results. They've had this particular item almost word for word in every single changelog for the Nokia Store client for the last 2.5 years. They're obviously continually tweaking this algorithm whereby you can type something in and it will present you a list of results. I still don't think it's as good as the results that come out of the Android and iPhone markets, even after all these changes. But there's no doubt, Rafe, it is getting very, very slightly better. And these days you can spell something wrong or put the capitalization wrong or a space in, and you usually find what you want.
Yeah, it's definitely getting better. I mean, one of the reasons for that is they're actually including more metadata on the back end. So when a developer submits an application via OviPublish, they're asked to fill in various tags and also mood tags and things like this that are then used by the search engine. So although those tags aren't always kind of visible to the end user in the sort of application page, they are used by the search engine. But part of the reason this sort of takes a while to come into effect, of course, all the old applications, the ones that have been submitted previously, don't necessarily have this extra metadata. And so you might make an improvement to the search engine, but it'll only then start impacting on new applications. But I will say, when I was trying this out and I did a few searches, because like you, I was a little skeptical about the improvements, and I did think, yes, it does seem to be producing better results. And I think it's also tying in with some of the popularity in terms of downloads and things like that. If you type in something like Twitter, you do seem to be getting better results than previously. So I'm always in favour of that, because obviously search is probably the single most important tool for discovering new applications, especially now we've got the point where it's you can't browse through the complete list. There are thousands of applications on Nokia Store, and search is a really important way of finding, particularly if you've seen a reference to an application elsewhere.
Yeah, you can get this new QML written store application if you go to betalabs.nokia.com on your device. I mean, you can obviously do it on the desktop, but I noticed that the Beta Labs team have a very nice mobile site. You can sign in and download all the information and do the downloads directly onto your device, which saves all that downloading onto your desktop and then copying it across via USB cable or via Bluetooth. So yeah, just betalabs.nokia.com, bookmark it on your smartphone and you're good to go. So very nicely done. I do have a question, Rafe, on compatibility. Let's say you've got application X gets put through to the store and the developer ticks it for the N8 and the E7 and the E6 and all these different devices. And then along comes a new device, say a month later, the Nokia 701, for example. And does the developer then need to go back manually and explicitly edit his application to add a flag for the new device? Or is there some kind of intelligent algorithm at Nokia's end that thinks, okay, well, it was compatible with device A, so it should be compatible with devices B, C, and D. We'll auto-tick them for them. Is that the reason why some apps don't come up for new devices? Is it really dependent on the developer manually going in and adding stuff?
Well, it's actually a combination of both, and this is how the Ovi Publish tool works. What there actually is there's an assume to work flag, and so you can mark a platform or a version of the platform, say Symbian 3, as assume to work, and it will then apply to all devices that come out with that particular platform. Now, some exceptions will be made to that, and a good example of that is something like the E6, and obviously for good reason, because that is different enough that it may not work. And so developers will have to sometimes come back in and mark things explicitly as new, and that will happen with new versions. I haven't checked this out specifically, but I imagine the same thing might apply to the Bell devices, which might explain why they have slightly fewer applications. But in most of the cases, there should be a certain amount of intelligence in that it will sort of automatically mark it as assumed to work. However, that said, the developer can still come back in and say, yes, I've tested this device, it definitely works. And so if you like, there's almost three ratings. There's, you know, won't work, assumed to work, and definitely will work, has been tested, you know, fully approved, etc. And I suspect there's a certain amount that is used when presenting application lists. So priority will be given to things that have been definitely tested for that device and have, you know, absolutely will work. And it will vary from market to market. You know, some markets will only take a free application because they don't have the payment set up. And, you know, when you're being stricter about things, it may only take applications that have been absolutely fully tested. And that may be dependent on your operator or your particular market. So there's actually quite a bit of complexity in it. But, I mean, the basic answer to your question is most of the time, if you're getting a standard device, you know, there are some exceptions like the E6, it should just work with the applications. But it's always a good idea for any developer to go back in on a periodic basis and make sure that everything's marked as compatible and everything's working, and to update the metadata for the application that I was describing earlier.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're nearly out of time, but two quick questions to the team. One question to Ewan. What's the wind speed?
The wind speed is a measure of how fast certain molecules in the air are passing through a fixed reference point. Need to be specific. Currently, we are at a steady 60 miles an hour, gusting up to 90, with a climb up to 105 nautical miles an hour, peaking at 1400 today.
And is it true you're using these airborne currents to fly off to Switzerland tomorrow? Isn't that rather risky?
Yes, risque. No, actually no, because low pressure will probably be between Scotland and Norway tomorrow, so their flying will be fine. I'm away off to Switzerland to watch their national final, where they select the song that they will send to the semi-final, which will then possibly go to the final of the Eurovision Song Contest. And the person who won the first contest back in 1956 is entering this year, so hopefully she's not going to do a Tommy Cooper.
I'm just looking at the BBC News website and it says, do not travel, storm warning. Police are advising people in central Scotland, that's where Ewan lives if people don't know where Edinburgh is, not to travel as severe winds start to batter the country. Are you still going to brave the winds to get to the airport, Ewan?
You're the one that suggested I go.
Well, by all means, but we'd like you to come back safely because we need you back for next week's podcast, as well as doing some writing too.
I mean, it's Thursday today we're recording and the wind will be away by Friday, so I don't have a problem with that. I think everything will be fine. Besides, I get to find out what the Swiss telecom networks are like. Seemingly, it's only 2 Swiss francs a day for unlimited internet.
Wonderful. Okay, one quick question for Rafe. You did mention earlier, Rafe, you had a Windows phone device in one pocket, which I'm guessing is the Lumia 800, but you also said you have a Symbian phone in the other pocket. Just out of curiosity, which Symbian phone have you picked to be the primary device?
Well, actually, at the moment, it's the Nokia E6 as I sit here. But depending on the circumstances, I do sometimes switch to the Nokia N8, basically because of the superior camera. And actually, I'm just going to give a quick plug for a bit of content that Steve did on the site this week, comparing the Lumia 800 camera with the Nokia N8. And it's safe to say the Nokia N8 romped away with all honours. It's a much better camera. It's the bigger sensor, really, is what it comes down to. But
I have a question.
Go on, Ewan.
If you have to make a phone call, which handset are you picking up?
Depends what time of day it is.
Now?
It would be the Windows phone device because it has my number in it that most people have. But towards the end of the day, and it's a micro SIM card now, of course, because it's in the Windows phone device, it's a bit of a hassle to carry our converter. But I will admit there have been occasions when I've been out for a very long day and using the device very heavily where the batteries ran out on the Lumia 800. So I've been very glad to have a second device with me. And of course, the E6, the great thing is you can... especially as I'm perhaps not using it as much as I might do if it was my only device, the battery is lasting 3 or 4 days, and so it's far more likely to have a charge when I actually need to make that late at night phone call. And particularly when your car decides to break down and you want the AA to come out and rescue you, you're very, very glad that you've got your Symbian device with you.
Which happened to Rafe yesterday. Just a bit of a trivia there. I also know that Rafe, as an arch geek, has more than one SIM card and more than one mobile number. It's been a source of great amusement to me when I want to contact Rafe in the past. I don't know, which of these three mobile numbers do I use? Well, you don't have this problem with most normal people, of course, but we are arch geeks and we like splitting our numbers around. We are out of time on this All About Symbian Insight podcast. A very big thanks to you and Spence.
Yes, it is my V.
Travel safely, and a big thanks to Rafe Blandford.
Goodbye from the abnormal me.
And you can catch us, as usual, at AAS on Twitter. We've also got a Facebook group, and of course, allaboutsymbian.com. We will catch you next week on the podcast. Bye for now.